Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X-Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight, or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X-Squared Radio. I'm so glad you could join us tonight. Here on X-Squared Radio, we're coming to you live from east of the Appalachian Mountains. Our AccuWindow forecast, about 55 degrees, and just getting over some rain, maybe heading back into it for a couple days. The solar wind today is a paltry 363 kilometers per second. The galactic wind continues to reshape the heliosphere and expose planet Earth to strange high-energy particles. After fading away for a day, sunspot 1056 has returned, and it is growing rapidly. The active region does not yet pose a threat for strong flares, but this could change if its expansion continues this pace. Last night, the crescent moon and the Pleiades star cluster gathered for a pretty close encounter over North America. In Texas, the encounter was so close, the moon actually covered some of the Seven Sisters. Don't worry, Americans who missed the occultation can always catch the next one, just like it, in the year 2023. Tons of sand from deserts in China's interior blew into Beijing Saturday, shrouding China's capital in a yellow-orange haze that authorities warned made the air quality hazardous. There were few people out on the streets where pedestrians could taste the dust. Many of those who had ventured from their homes were wearing face masks, and some left footprints in the yellow film that had settled on the city's streets. Beijing Weather Forecasting Bureau gave the air quality a rare 5, or hazardous, rating, and added that it was not suitable for morning exercises. Parks and open spaces are usually packed from early in the day with enthusiasts doing martial arts, ballroom dancing, and other activities. The government has spent millions of dollars on projects to rein in the spread of deserts, planting trees and trying to protect what plant cover remains in marginal areas. But the battle is being fought against a backdrop of rising average temperatures and increasing pressure on water resources after three decades of booming growth. I wouldn't put so much faith in the press, Earth Explorers. The Earth is still warming and showing signs of warming, despite the recent winter performance. My new book, Remembering the Future, will be out in ebook form next Sunday. The printed version will take as long as 3 months, as there is a terrible backlog at the printer and publisher. However, you do not have to wait for them. You can read and enjoy it next Sunday. Stay tuned to this program next Sunday, and we'll tell you how you can get your copy instantly. Twitter is alive and well on X Squared Radio. I add stuff all day as we approach the announcement on the Inner Earth Expedition, the launch of the nation's first affordable electric vehicles, and other great things. So follow me on Twitter by searching for Brooks Agnew. We have been listening to your comments and emails. Next month, X Squared Radio will begin the process of becoming syndicated. You have enjoyed the program for 5 years now, and finally, we have been provided a way to get the program onto the airwaves. Your energy has helped us, so please tell a friend, as we get ready to launch X Squared Radio Live. Don't forget, we're always a proud member of the VBS Radio Network, and we will never leave. As long as they are here, we will be here as well. We want to let you know that our format is going to probably change in the next month. Rather than have a single guest on for 3 hours, we may have as many as 4 guests on in the 3 hours. So if you have enjoyed the current format with one author on for 3 hours telling his story to the fullest, let us know. We'll let our producers know. If you want to see more guests on X Squared Radio, then just let us know. We'll be back in 40 seconds with our guests. Don't go away. X Squared Radio is about to begin. Many of you have been stopped in your efforts to explore the world's literature or great works of art or even original science because you lacked the language skills to read German or Latin or even Spanish. We have been taught from our youth that God cursed the world with a confusion of languages after Nimrod attempted to build a tower to approach him. People just wandered off, unable to understand what the other person was saying. No surprises there, really. I've seen the same thing after business meetings where everyone spoke the same language. Tonight on X Squared Radio, we want to discover perhaps what language was like before we were divided into so many types of speech. What is the real root of humanity? What is the metaphysics behind language? Here to help us understand this amazing mystery is Kevin David. Welcome to the program, Kevin.
Ni shanti hama, ni hao, Brooks. How are you?
Hey, I am doing wonderful. What a week we have had. Holy moly. We had real live spring here this week. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, so we had spring and also winter at the same time. In China, it's having a sandstorm. Some of my students have been messaging me on what their IM is called. It's called QQ, and I've been getting all these messages, and they're telling me about the weather in Beijing. Very unusual.
Yeah, it really is. I don't know what has been going on there. They've had some kind of very, very strange sandstorms picking up the sand in the deep desert and blowing it all the way into Beijing. I mean, they've had their share of really terrible weather this year. They've had snow. They've had smoggy conditions that were so bad the streetlights came on in the middle of the day.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, where I was the same way. The province I was in was experiencing a lot of changes in weather. It would be nice one day, and next thing you know, it's snowing, and it's highly windy, too. I've experienced it. I was along the coastline where I was at in the Shandong province area, and the weather there was windy all the time, unusual, too.
Goodness. Well, we are told, Kevin, that we are eternal beings having a mortal experience. It isn't so hard to imagine.
We are?
It's not so hard to imagine no ending. I mean, you know, we wake up every day and the sun comes up, and as we get older, it gets easier and easier. But when we have to contemplate no beginning to ourselves, that's where our imagination kind of gets hung up. Now, I'm sure if we existed for millions of years, then there must have been a method of communicating that has existed that long as well. How do we begin to really understand the roots of language?
You know, roots of language have always been inside ourselves. I mean, it's within our blueprint. It's just a matter of taking the time and listening and seeing where the language originates from. We're much more than what we appear to be, and you know that, and listeners do. They're trying to reconcile this with things that are happening. Perhaps you're speaking a language or find themselves speaking a language they don't really understand or comprehend. Etunakota, you know, things like that. You know, what is that language? And it's something that's part of you. It's something that you have to self-discover in, inside you. It goes back very, very, very long in a period of time as we know it, eons of time. So the original language is part of us. It can be compared to any number of things involving light and sound, acoustics and color and form. It's completely, see, we wake up into a default reality every day, Brooks. It's kind of interesting. We all commonly just wake up to the same default reality, but some of us are feeling something a little bit more than that. Some of us are seeing a little bit beyond that and are trying to reconcile, what is this? Where are we coming from? And that's kind of the focus of my study. It has been for many, many years.
Well, I mean, it would seem that we would have to have some idea what the oldest known civilization would be. Now, we think back to, you know, the days of Moses or the days of Egypt or the ancient days of China. But we really need to go back much further than that, don't we, to get to the roots of anthropology for the human race.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. You have to remember that the way the configuration of the Earth has changed over the eons of time, and continents aren't where they were, and many of these civilizations are underwater. They're under the sea. And much of the technology and the advanced technology that existed with them is there, and it's calling to us. And some of us are hearing that, and some of us are drawn to the sea, not so much maybe other places, sacred geometric places, like Egypt or Mexico, but some of us are drawn to the sea and they go, hey, there's no land there. I don't understand. But at one time, yeah, some of these places did exist, and it was pre, before these, Egypt and so forth. And the languages originated, you know, with them as it was. So many of these continents, the places of where the original languages and peoples existed, the technologies, are underwater, but they're also hidden very deep into the Earth, too. And if you want to call it the inner Earth, we can call that, too.
Well, now you've opened it all, so we're going to have to talk about it all. We're going to talk 3 hours. That's all there is to it. So in your studies, and you've got a lot more study into language than I do. I mean, I've kind of been assaulted by language my whole life. Languages that just pop out of me in the middle of the night that I don't get to hear, but other people around me get to hear. What is the oldest known civilization?
It can't be. It's something that's not describable in any known language. What I found is, of course, we still have to find a number of the halls of records, quote unquote. There are a few of them that are being discovered, but there are ones that are so old, so ancient, that trying to access these things, takes a little bit more than just, you know, digging around. They're almost shadows, in effect, because we do function on multi different planes of realities and dimensions. So we have to think in terms of the ancient cultures doing the same thing. Of course, you know, we're still seeing that three-dimensional reality that we wake up to, but we're much more than that. And the Earth, being polyhedral in this way, etheric, that's the origin. That's the, quote-unquote, the light-being origin. We are much lighter than we were, personality-wise, too. So the forms that we take as humanity became integrated into the matrix of the Earth, well, these cultures were built upon what that original light-being style culture was, as what we were. So the language of that would be involving light and sound, telepathic communications, you know, things along the lines that ones are experiencing, and they can't reconcile that. You know, they're hearing these things, this music, or seeing these things in their mind, these languages, and it's brought to us in human terms that we can understand, because a long time ago, the Indians, the Native Americans, when the first white Europeans came to the shores, they didn't have a reference point as to how these people came to their land. So they're looking out and they're seeing these ripples of water, and you see these white Europeans, you know, soldiers, and, you know, where did you come from? and he would point outside to go, look, look, over there. They point to the ocean, you know, into the bay, into the cove, and there's a ship there. And the Indians go, I can't see that. They don't know what it is. So the medicine man or the shaman at night would draw the image of a ship in the sand when he'd see this vision. And then the Indians go, yeah, we know what a ship is now. So then they go out the next day and they'll look into the bay and they see the ship. We just don't have a frame of reference to see everything except within our minds. And that's how we can reconcile some of these languages that are appearing or awakening within our DNA, within our blueprint program.
Well, when we talk about these ancient languages, you know, some of these things required, of course, the voice, because that's the way we human beings are built now. But it also might have been accompanied by hand signs or even by, you know, colors associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
How did we incorporate this into our language?
Well, we can see the frequencies, actually the frequencies of color and sound, okay? Hand signs, things that were part of, you know, the humanity as it was evolving, or actually you want to call it de-evolving, you know, from something that's, you know, super, you know, super intelligence to something, you know, that's, we still have that, but somehow we de-evolved. So we have to communicate. We've lost the ability to some extent to communicate as we did before. We would use, you know, frequencies of color and sound and patterns and things that we would identify with. For example, indigo. Indigo would be the third eye. That's the communication. The sound of that would be, you know, a note, a key that you play that would awaken that particular organ, you know, that is atrophied. So sound and color infusing into a certain area of the body produce the response, and that's how it communicates with our intelligence and with our body functions and in our health, for that matter. We know that. So how we communicate with each other is very interesting. Even back then, it's I kind of know what you're saying, or I can identify what you're. That's how we did it all the time. It was not so much spoken vocal cords, but it was feelings, it was emotions, it was colors. All of this coming as a language that we can understand. We see these in our dreams. We see these when we do our awakening process, and it's amazing because, you know, when I started studying this, the first time this happened, you know, was I started speaking in another language, and I had no idea what this was at all. And it's not a Native American, and this was almost 15, 16 years ago now, and I still haven't reconciled it. But it's just amazing how. But then you'll see colors, you'll see sounds. It's a completely different frame of reference that it takes time to understand this. This is the communication process from these ancient civilizations. They were more light rather than, you know, substance than we are now. And as time went on, so civilizations were built upon each other, and each one of these civilizations, these cultures, had legends. Legends of gods, legends of super beings, the myths, you know, the mythologies came from the original cultures because they were, in a sense, they were gods, you know, it's comparison to what we would know today. So all these gods that exist, it's just a mirror of what that culture was or what we were once at one time.
Well, one of the things that I notice when I travel the world, I learn a little Japanese, a little German, a little Spanish, even less Hebrew, and, you know, but Chinese escapes me a little bit because it's not so much the words. Like, you know, in our professional training, we hear it said, it's not so much what you say, it's how you say it. You mean the tone of what we're saying? Well, yes, that too, your facial expressions, your hand motions, your body language, all that, and how you say words. But in Chinese, there's all that and pitch and intonation. This is extremely complex, and it can lead to not only such incredible misunderstanding, but it can also lead to incredible description. such levels of description and precision in language that really aren't achievable in just plain old English, just the written, you know, read word. There's more to it than that. How did these aspects of pitch and tone and even posture come into the way that we communicate with one another?
It's kind of interesting. I'm just reminded of a movie called Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And remember seeing where the aliens came onto the bluff there, okay? And they wanted to communicate with the aliens. So they communicated in what? Light and sound. So go do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. So what was that? What was that? Was a greeting. It was like a communication form.
Right, right.
But now listen to this. Now, if I say Ni Shen Ti Hao Ma, you wouldn't understand what I'm saying. But if I said Ni Shen Ti Hao Ma, Ni Shen Ti Hao Ma, in the tonal flex of the Chinese, that means good health to you. Good health
Get
to you.
Get out of here.
Ni Shen Ti. I know. I did this on my radio show. I did my radio show on campus at the university. And the students, you know, they go, they're looking at me, and I'm referencing this movie, and they ran out, and they watched the movie, and they came back, and they go, Kevin, it's true. It's really weird. So, but yeah, Ni Shen Ti Hao Ma means good health to you. So how did the Chinese arrive at that tonal inflection in their language? And how did the director use that in the movie? How did he know that? That's really interesting.
Wow.
That's just
mind-blowing. I mean, there's so many dimensions. So many dimensions that we could take that.
Yeah,
there's an implication that there's an off-world content to the ancient language, that maybe ancient language was taught
absolutely.
To early man or came here with settlers from other worlds, which eventually became humans as we know them. Why don't we have records of this? Is there a hall of records somewhere that tells us what our roots are?
That was part of my quest when I was over there for almost 4 years. That was part of it. Yeah, I went over there to teach, but at the same time, the motive was to do the research for the project I was working on, and to go back and find where these halls of records are. And, the inner earth has those. That's the main, that's one of them. But they do exist. And there are artifacts involved, and I have a few of those artifacts that are keys to finding these actual libraries, or perhaps it could libraries/stargates, earthgates. We have to think in terms of not just, a stargate or a library as we look at it, but it's a meld of all these different things. And there are artifacts. They do exist, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And have any of the artifacts been found yet? Or is the Hall of Records?
Yes, there have. Located? Yeah, there have been. Oh, yes, absolutely. The problem is we don't know how to play them. Example being is, let's take our DVD or our CD. It's filled with music and programming and wonders and an entire library of information. Now let's take that and go back to 1960 when we were kids. And someone comes up to you and go, this is the entire library, the encyclopedia, and it's all these movies on here. What would you do if you looked at this person and looked at this DVD? You'd think they're crazy. Then you try to figure out how do you play this thing. To us, we're laughing. We're laughing now because we know this. This is a DVD, and think of the terms of these artifacts that were found, and we're sitting here playing with them, trying to figure out how they work, how we can access the database, the data stream. It's the same process, and that's what I've been working on for about 10 years. I have the artifacts, and it's a matter of using light, color, sound, and frequency ranges in order to open and access these things. And that's basically the hard wire of it. The soft wire is within us. We're actually a key, too. So it takes that. It takes us, and it also takes that, the artifact, and plus where the location is. That's how it works.
Now, are these artifacts, are they iconic in nature? Do they stimulate some kind of ancient memory?
Yeah,
or
absolutely.
Is it just
Oh yes, they are. It's part of the even when you enter into a room, and I've been close to these. I know I've been close. It's just a matter of finding it. It's almost like shadows. It's everything's within a holographic type thing, and it's the imagery is you got to find these places, and you can do that. It's the nature of these things. You can access these, but you got to find the rooms. You got to find the right frequency range or the area in which would resonate with how to open these up. But it's possible. That's amazing. It really is. I even tried it here about 10 years ago. I got more than I can handle. It was an overload of information. But it's more or less imagery. And we have to remember at our stage of evolution, humanity as it is, we take something like that and say, I want to know the language of the universe. I want to know everything right now. We can't do it. We can't handle it. We have to handle it in stages, just like your awakening. Let's say you're in Karnak, Egypt, and you go into a room, and all of a sudden you're speaking another language. You're seeing flashes of imagery come, whatever, symbols, maps, things like that. You're seeing all of this, but if you got all the information at once, it would be too much for you. It would be too much for you to access. So you got to take these things in stages, how much you can handle, turning up the volume. That's how that really works.
Well, I know people get, glimpses and shadows. They have dreams. They have visions. They have things that happen in meditation, small downloads, large downloads. And they seem to come from ancient sources or maybe even future sources that have come back to visit us.
Exactly. Good. That's the point.
When we wander the world and we see the evidence of these beings who have been here, who have built things, who have tried to build things, we have to ask the question, did those ancient beings move on, or are there still some of them here?
They're probably not going to move on because they have an interest in what's happening here. So we have to remember things are ultra-dimensional. They can change their frequency. They can be standing right next to you and me right now listening. There's no question that, we're being guided, we're being protected, we're being influenced by things. On a different frequency. It was an old Star Trek episode that I remember that I had dealt with that. So as I was growing up, there's an element of truth in just about everything. So vibrational frequencies, how this thing works. Yes, there's no question. It could be standing right next to where you're sitting or floating or whatever, but they do influence us. They influence our ways of what we are, what we're doing, whatever mission we're on. Of course, I doubt that they've moved on. Because they have an interest in this. But they have left their culture. They have left examples. They have left some things to discover. It's like, for example, God, whatever God you believe in, isn't going to give you courage. Isn't going to give you that, but it's going to give you opportunities to discover that. So we're given opportunities to discover our past, our real heritage, and to go past as far as back as we can and to listen to ourselves and to listen to what's with the music in our minds. And that's our map. And we can find these places. It exists. It's very real.
I'm just, when you use the term real and we look at evidence, or you see evidence or I see evidence, how do we proliferate that evidence? How do we get that out to the average person so that they can see that, that either their roots extend, far back than the county from which their genealogy comes from, or even the color of their skin. I'm assuming that the ancient populations weren't as numerous as ours are today, and perhaps they lived much longer than we do today. Where do you think all the souls came from that are here on the earth today?
It's the origin. It's like, okay, who made us? The creators versus the creation. How did the legends come about? There's so many works of writings about this. I remember when I was investigating this back in the early 90s, when I was, investigating, there wasn't a whole lot of books on it, but how do you reconcile this? Where do these people come from, or where do these beings come from?
Yeah.
What was their origins? That's the big question, and that's where these records will tell us exactly. You have to go back eons of time, discover the cultures, which are there. The halls of records are there, and it's beyond Atlantis, beyond Mu. It's so far back. Because of the frame of reference we have, maybe just take us back to the time about Mu or Atlantis, but it goes back a lot farther. Once we know how to handle what's happening, you know, a few hundred thousand, then we can go back farther. And
finding a great hall of records might sort of awaken some people. I mean, especially if the History Channel was there, or Discovery Channel or National Geographic Channel, there might be some credibility added to it. But, I mean, what would they say? Okay, we've cracked open the mountain. We're lifting back the door. Oh, my gosh, now I know where we came from. Do you really think that the human race would drop everything they're doing and worshiping now and believe what it is that it is found in the record hall?
Probably not. Because it would change the way their belief system is. So there are certain truths that are ingrained. Whatever religious experience they're experiencing now may change, and that's frightening to them. It's fear. But then what's going to happen in 2012, or what's going to happen, you know, in the future, is going to be a big change. It's going to be a change that's going to happen that they're going to have to deal with. It's going to happen. This is the truth. I mean, this is what's happening. This is what's occurring. And they're going to have to reconcile. They're going to have to do it. They're going to have to listen to what the Earth has to say. So if the Earth says, okay, this is what's, because we're part of this. We're part of this experience, this human journey, this experience. And when newer truths or ones that are original, we'll be able to receive these better, more receptive to this knowledge. We couldn't do that in 1960 or 65 or whatever. But maybe now we can, because many people are talking. We have all these radio shows. We have all these ones, like yourself. We're discovering these things. People are more apt to listen. Once they start listening, that's where the magic is. When you start listening to yourself, more things come up. More things are being revealed. More languages that you don't know what they mean, you're speaking. And it's a slow process, but it's accelerating. More people are awakening. More people are coming to realize, man, this is, I can't explain this, but it has no association with any area that's known. You go to a Chinese person, perhaps one of my students, and I've done this, and I've talked about Atlantis and Moon and meditation, and they it's not even on their radar. They don't even know what that is because they have a different reference point. The same thing with the Native Americans and the Polynesians. They're actually caretakers of a consciousness. They're guardians of a consciousness because they're entrusted with that. And part of my journey in China had to do with that. What the Chinese and the Polynesians and the Native Americans have to do with the original ones who created the planet.
You know, you say it's accelerating, and it seems to be accelerating coming into the world. One of the things that I notice is that babies seem to have a way of communicating that we might not think very primitive, but they do seem to pass messages along to one another, simple as it might be. Do you think our parents unlearn us from the true way of communicating?
Probably, considering the time that we grew up with. We grew up in the Leave It to Beaver era. And everything was black and white, you know. And then here comes the Beatles, and then here comes, you know, everything in the 60s. And it was like that quick. It was overnight. It was the Beatles. Then it was that period of time between 1964 and 1969 was a tremendous change for all of us. You know, it was make love, not war. It was all these different things. We were discovering colors, bright colors. Music, all of this. But that was part of the quote-unquote Age of Aquarius, and we were part of that. So we already discovered it. We were part of that pioneering of what that frame of mind would be now. and it's more acceptable. We're not doing anything different than we did back then. It's just that we're saying it in a different way, and we're discovering evidence related to those experiences. There's evidence. There's the physics evidence. That's Brooks Agnew, you know, the physics evidence of this. And then all these others, David Hatcher, Childress, all these guys that have come around talking about this, they're just reinforcing what was being awakening back then, 40 years ago.
Well, I think there's a difference, though, because like the shaman that you were describing before, where they were standing on the beach and they could see the ships, but their people couldn't see the ships because they didn't have a frame of reference. We generally don't have a frame of reference, and there are a few of us out here that are getting little glimpses. We can feel the ripples between dimensions and maybe stick our hand through or stick our face through and get a view of what's on the other side and then come back. But largely, the society is just like those natives on the beach. They can't see the ships. They don't know the ships exist. And yet,
exactly.
When we close our eyes and go into meditation, the ships are there.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it's just an amazing experience. We have to have that frame of reference, and that's what language is about. It's communicated us as time went on. The original language is still the way it is, light, sound, color, form, but it's not just three-dimensional. I mean, you just can't look at it, and there's more to it. Because a blind person can't see the original. They can't read something because they're blind, but they can feel it. If they're in a sacred site area, they don't have to see it. They can feel it. They have other sensories.
I mean, define blindness. I mean, blindness.
I mean, in a sense, let's say they're absolutely blind physically. Let's say I'm blind and I have a physical problem. I can't see, at all. Not just spiritually blind. I physically can't read the message. I can't see what the symbols are in that way. They can read Braille, but they can't read that. But they can feel. They can feel the area. They can resonate with that. And then perhaps they may be able to see these images in their minds. I've never spoken to anyone that was blind that did. It would be interesting to see what they feel. But it goes to show you that the languages are ultra-dimensional. If there's more to it than just, moving the letters around. Or trying to do something, trying to understand, what the pictorials look like, et cetera. There's more to it. There's a story. There's something that's more to that than meets the eye, and it resonates. And then once you see the resonation, then you'll see more of what it's trying to tell you. Then you're gaining reference points, and that's what's happening with ones now. They're just getting a glimpse, and that's really cool. You're doing really good. Just keep doing it. Just flow like the river. Just let it go. And things will come to you as you get used to it. We're finding many that are doing that. And they're getting really excited about it. And they have so many questions. And there's not enough answers yet, unfortunately, but we're getting them.
Well, one of the things I found fascinating is that human bodies will give off a spectra of light that can be seen with special instruments. Do you think that we do see this and just pay no attention to it? We're blind to it. We haven't paid any attention to it for a long time. Or do you think we can be conscious of it without the special instruments?
Well, that's the thing. Anything that's man-made assists us in trying to understand it. But the natural ability of us, we should be able to see it on our own, to answer the question, yes. Anything that's man-made, you're trying to measure something that's not, it's measurable to some extent, like curly in photography. Okay, it's measurement, but it's not the complete picture. There's more to it.
There has to be more to it.
Yeah, we have to feel it. Yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, because we could get fooled. I mean, someone might say that I am very red when I know that I feel very green. So how do we project the color we want? And if we don't want to project the color we want, is there a way to gain control of our color output?
Mm-hmm. You can. You think of the color. Thought is, the fastest form of communication. It's thought.
Do you think animals can see this color?
Mm-hmm. I don't. Well, dogs see, for example, they see
black and white.
But they do feel. You see, animals do feel. They have other senses, even though they may not see exactly what, you know, in colors. Some do. But it's a matter of using all your senses to feel it and to see it. And we're capable of doing that. We're very capable of sensing things that are occurring and be able to see colors. If you're projecting a color, that's your thought pattern. An example being Emoto's work with water crystals. I don't know if you're familiar with his work, but he uses water crystals or snowflakes, analyzes what they look like, and then he projects thoughts or music or sounds to it, and it actually changes form, which is interesting because think about not just the ability of the thought projection of a perhaps purified water or playing a symphony or music or thoughts to make that crystal, you know, become beautiful. Or if you play, you know, if you project bad thoughts, the crystals are going to become, you know, not very good in structure. They're very, you know, sad looking. They're very ugly. But if you're happy and say thank you or, you know, things like that, when you express something on something water, consisting of water, it's going to change its frequency. It's going to change its structure. Same thing with the human body. Mostly liquid water. So our thoughts do affect our cellular structure, not in the water. So that's why my students always tell me, be happy, Kevin. Have a great day. They're always messaging me. They're always upbeat. They're always smiling because that's how they're taught. They're taught, you know, to be happy, to accept it, to do this. And my students do this for me. And they always express, be happy, have a nice day. And it's always, and it makes you feel good because your body feels good because they're projecting and you're projecting. And that's how you have good health. Ni shanti hama.
That is so cool. Well, let me ask you.
It is. It's just when you think about all of this, it's amazing.
I mean, let me ask you this. Yeah. How important is it, you know, for our aura, for our true self? I mean, if the aura is giving off a certain color and we're really getting a true biofeedback of that color, how important is that for our true self? I mean, can people talk one game and be an entirely different color? And if we could see it, then perhaps we could prevent ourselves from being deceived. You know, if we could really see someone's real aura, could we tell if they were being true or not?
Yeah, you can. I mean, you know, some are very they sense this, and they can do that. Yeah, it's a natural way of communication. Again, it's a language. It's a language of, you know, communication. You know, colors and aura and all that. Yes, it's very true. You'd be able to sense all that. Yeah. And that's part of our nature. That's part of what we have inside us. You know, we are the hall of records. It's inside of us. It's a matter of we may need a jump start to kind of understand a lot of what's going around us because it's. But once you start seeing it, it's part of your reference point. If you can see auras, and then you're doing really well. I mean, it's just something that's so cool.
You know, it kind of reminds me of animals like cuttlefish and octopuses that can communicate with color arrangements on their skin. Do humans do this too? I mean,
chameleons? Yeah. I wouldn't say it's so much that, but it can change your frequency. It can change your frequency, and you can project some. You know, if you walk into a room, for example, let's say Brooks Agnew walks into a room. There's going to be some sort of magnetic feeling, right? You know, they're going to recognize that as opposed to someone who may not be as recognizable or they have an attitude. People are going to sense that. So, yes, it's possible. It is like that. We're not so much projecting a color, but we are projecting emotional content. Ah, that's the interesting point, is how we project emotional content to one another. The language of communication in that way. But that will also project an aura. If some can pick that up, they can actually see the color. Yeah.
Interesting. I guess what I'm trying to do is get kind of a a synchronizing between sound, pitch, the intonation that we add to language, facial expressions, posture, and even color. If all of these were part of the ancient language, and I really believe as complex of beings as humans are, and certainly as complex as our messages are to one another, and how frequently we misunderstand each other, I mean completely, what we want to say, what we want to accomplish,
sure,
turns out not to be at all what we say or what we accomplish.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because we're not employing all of the aspects of communication. Let's just call it the full spectrum of language. Let's call it communication. You're an expert at it. How you're taking people who have spoken Chinese since the earth cooled, and you're teaching them English. How do you do this? How do you get understanding across to them?
It has to do a lot with the emotional content of the language. I have to understand them from their viewpoint, and they have to also understand. When you're teaching a language, it's not just words. For example, a Native American, the word for life in most Native American languages, when we say the word life, what do you think of? Is it just something, well, life, breathing, whatever? But to a Native American, this is something that is the circle of life. There's more to it. There's more emotion in the language. They also have, when they were approached by Europeans after, you know, during the time of back in the 1800s when they were taking their land from them, the Lakota Indian, the Sioux, have no word for ownership of land. They have no concept of ownership of the land.
Oh, right, right, yeah.
There's no concept. They don't understand it because they're part of that. So it's the emotional content of the language. Once you understand that, because they're looking at us, they go, we don't own the earth. And that's why they have so many problems on the reservation, because it's a prison. It's a prison to them. That's why there's a lot of problems, because it's like, you know, they need to be free, because that's part of, you know, the earth. I mean, that's the land that they've inherited from their children. And to just place them and force them and put them on a reservation, it's difficult for them to exist. It's not in their consciousness. Their consciousness is saying, you know, it's an infinite freedom. And they're being deprived of that, and that's why they're suffering. So that's how languages work. There's a lot that has to do with the emotional content of the language. So when I teach my kids, they teach me too. And it's how the communication, how we feel the language, and that's how I teach it. You have to feel what that word is. How do I improve my spoken English? They always ask me, the most popular, how do I do that? I say, get the feel for the language. And then I'll ask you the same question. How do I improve my spoken Chinese? And they start laughing at me because they know the answer is the same answer as mine. It's identical. You have to feel the language. So I answer their question with a question. And then we start exploring the languages. But their languages have so many different tones to it. And for one word, you have four tones. It's amazing. Like Lao Shi means teacher. Now, if I say Lao Shi, that might mean horse. It has to do with...
Well, I've known
teachers exactly. Horses, so I'll be, that's why Westerners have so much trouble with the language. And I still have trouble, even after going on 4 years. You know, my friends say, you know, you speak American Chinese. You know, they're laughing at me. But we're not used to the tone inflections and how that feels like in the language. And it's a very impressive language. It really is. It's a very... I shouldn't say it's so much complex, but it's a very human, emotional language. And many languages are like that. And you got to have the feel in order to understand. That's why, in order for us to understand something so far back in time, we have to have a feel for, you know, what's happening now. And then your journey can take you back farther. So you learn a little bit now, then you learn later. And you'll find your way back.
Oh, yeah. Cool. And the idea is
really cool. It's really cool.
One of my listeners, Alex, says, we see more as we grow. The holdback.
Absolutely.
Is no desire to grow.
Yeah. And don't have the fear. That's another thing is don't be afraid. Just let it, just express yourself. And that's the problems I have in China with my students. they're so shy, they can't express it, they're afraid. I go, that's okay, I need to know that. I need to know you have to express that language so I can help you. And that's what it is. It's just we have to grow. We're always growing, and as we grow, we outgrow our toys. We no longer play with the toys that we did as a child, you know.
Maybe as we continue to grow and develop, our full spectrum can only unfold when we do not need to communicate through words anymore.
Absolutely.
You know, it sounds so much... I remember an episode of King of the Hill. Billy came home with an F in English, to which his dad replied, "Billy, an F in English? You speak English."
that's funny. When you speak the language, it's like, come on, it's right there.
There are billions of people on the earth who speak English, but there are very few who have actually mastered the language. You know,
absolutely.
Is this a battle of awareness that we just can't win? Or, you know, are we ever going to get to where we can communicate and eliminate the differences between us?
Yes, you can. It's just a matter of, it's you. I mean, you're everything that your ancestors are. If you regress in a dream or an experience, that could be your ancestors talking to you. We have to remember, this is so important, that we are what our ancestors were. So perhaps if you have some sort of dream or some experience or you resonate with something, that's probably where your ancestors were. Or maybe you're on a boat and you're in the Atlantic Ocean somewhere in Iceland, near Iceland or wherever, and you go, well, I feel like this is familiar. Well, yeah, maybe about 16 fathoms down.
that's a good point.
Yeah, because it's resonating crystal or something, crystal resonating.
But is it familiar to us because we're remembering an ancestor, or are we recalling a previous life where we did this?
It could be a combination of both. It could be you can't discount, because we are everything our ancestors were. Plus, it could be a previous life, too. It could be an interaction, an interconnection, an identifying point. They're going to give you a reference point. Somehow, your ancestors are everything you are. Therefore, they could be talking to you. They could be speaking through you. And it could be that past life. Oh, yeah. It could be an interconnection. It's just trying to reconcile what it is or understand. But just enjoy the ride. Enjoy the experience. And listen and talk, and it's okay. Speak in the language you don't know, because somebody may come along and converse with you. Lakota.
What was that?
What's that?
What was that you just said?
That's your Lakota, meaning the mountain of love, in a language that I don't understand that I speak.
So what does Ame Ko Da mean?
Nakota. Etuane Nakota, meaning the mountain of love, Nakota.
Interesting how similar that is.
So it's,
you know, we have very few old cultures on the earth today. I mean, many of them, even the old ones that we see, have been somewhat modernized. They have two main themes that they all have in common. They all speak of a flood event, and they all speak of having come out of the earth, like from a hollow earth. Why do you think they had the idea of a hollow earth in their old histories?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, according to when I was younger, I guess one of my first movies that I loved was Journey to the Center of the Earth. And, you know, it resonated with me. That made a lot of sense, you know, everything with that movie. And it's true. I mean, we have to look at in terms of, you know, what we see and what really is. You know, it could be, you know, the twin circles. You know, everything seems to work in dualities. You know, when procreation is that, man and woman, duality. Okay, we have the ability to create something. So yeah, it's the inner earth. Yeah, the history of that. That's another hall of records, all in itself. Yeah, cultures. But yeah, you know, things. You know, the cultures coming from that. That point in time, the inner earth, and they always have these legends about, you know, what happened to the earth. Well, when did this happen? You know, was there a great flood, or was it just a lake that overflowed and, you know, destroyed some things in the Mediterranean? There's so many different stories or allegories, but every culture has legends. That's what's so interesting about going, where did these legends begin? What culture did they originate? And Inner Earth is something that is so fantastic that I'd love to find that, the Halls of Records. I'd love to go and, you know, actually find that. That'd be great.
Well, yeah, as would I. Well, we're coming up to the top of the first hour. I'm going to play some music that was recorded by a band called Adiemus, and it's in a language that they say was channeled from the Inner Earth. So we'll be back right after this with my guest, Kevin David. Don't go away. X-Squared Radio will return.
Yeah.
Welcome back to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We're coming to you live from east of the Appalachians in North Carolina. AccuWindow forecast about 51 degrees outside. My guest tonight is Kevin David. We're discussing ancient languages, their origins, and how they tie into the current human race. Also want to let you know, Remembering the Future is coming out as an ebook a week from today, so stay tuned. Make sure to get your copy as soon as possible. They'll be coming out at a price, an introductory price of $7.95. So that'll give you a chance to get it in your hands, follow up on the Ark of Millions of Years series. There was a preview of this book, 55 pages long, in Volume 3. And now we're up to 220 pages in this book. And believe me, all of the tools are there to master the law of attraction. We're going to open the phone lines this hour to 415-762-1161. Anywhere on planet or off planet, if you can reach a cell phone tower, you can get to us, 415-762-1161. We used to have toll-free numbers. Nobody made any use of it because everybody has free nights and weekends anyway, and cell phones with unlimited long distance. And we were kind of precluding those people in Europe because they don't have 800 service over there. So 415-762-1161. You can call in and ask any question you like. Welcome back to the program, Kevin.
Well, thank you. I've been chatting with my Chinese students, and they're trying to access the radio program in China on the computer. They're trying to get around the Great Firewall, as they say.
Ah, the Great Firewall.
For the program, so I have some students that, are you on the radio? What are you talking about? And I would, same thing I was talking about when I was teaching you. hopefully you'll get some friends over there in Shandong province.
Oh, that's good. Hey, where are your students at in China over there?
They're all over the place. I got them in Beijing and all over. I've been teaching there for almost 4 years, so on a university level, and a number of my students are in the working world now, and they're all over China, and I still, they come in contact with me, and they want to ask questions about their careers and things like that, and so imagine, like your IM, instant messaging, your MSN or your Yahoo, having about 500 friends. I have, the equivalent of that on QQ. It's their instant messaging. So I have about 500 friends, which are mostly students. And they're from all over China, mostly the Shandong province area. A lot of them are from the Beijing area. They come all over. It depends, some as far as Sichuan, where the earthquake was. I, have some students there and contribute a lot to the families there, and some of my students are teaching there now. I also have a class where I actually teach how to be a teacher and educate my students who want to be educators, and some of them are in Sichuan province right now. They're helping out and rebuilding that society there.
Wow. Yeah, I visited six cities when I was in China last May.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But I was only there, for 2 weeks, and you really can't see that much. And besides, I was there on business, so I didn't get to see the things I wanted to see. I want to talk a little bit about China here in a little bit. But one of the things that I noticed is that there are similarities between the Chinese and American indigenous peoples. In my travels to China, I found many different looking people, but the only common feature they had was the black hair. Some had round eyes, some had different chins, different teeth, and they come in a variety of heights. I mean, I couldn't believe how many men and women there were around 6 feet tall. It's crazy. I've often said that something's wrong with the world when the tallest man in basketball is Chinese and the world's mm-hmm. best golfer is only 10 years old.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'd be teaching students that are tall. I'm 6 feet, and I'm teaching. I'm looking up to some of these kids, and they just love basketball. And I did teach that. One of my classes I do teach is the relationship between the Native Americans and the Chinese people, you know, or actually the Asians that, you know, the ancient culture that came over from, you know, through the Bering Straits and into the Southwest, you know, forming the Native American cultures. And it's their relatives, it's their ancestors. And it's also kind of interesting that, you know, some of them are aware of that and some of them aren't. They want to know about the Native Americans. They want to know about who these people were. So I would show them, you know, well, I'll show movies about Native Americans and, you know, the history of that, you know, the true history of America. And they want to know. They have this consciousness inside. They have this yin consciousness, like the, you know, they're very soft. They're a very soft people because of their yin. We're yang. We're the yang type style. We're the more aggressive, the more bold. And so they're more yin with that. They want to know about their origins and where they came from as far as the culture, because many do believe, because it's a society where a lot of their history is censored. You can't access it. I can't just, you know, talk about certain things. There are certain things I can't talk about there. I can't, you know, discuss things involving the two T's, actually the three T's. But a lot of it, what they're learning is censored. They just don't know, but they know that they have a relationship with the Native American community. They know that, but they just don't know.
Well, I'm curious exactly which one came first, the Native Americans in the Americas or the Chinese people?
As far as what was that?
Which race came first? Was it the Native Americans or was it the Chinese?
Well, they're, you know, from the history, it indicates that it came from Asia. Some extent, but that's what they're thinking. I'm of a different line of thought, which that because the way the culture spread out in the history of South America and North America, and what we found, are, you know, as an, you know, I call myself an archaeo explorer, is quite different. There is a relationship when these cultures sank beneath the waves, they spread out. The cultures went all over. Okay, and they're part of that, but they have a relationship with the Native Americans. They sense that. But they don't know exactly the origin of that either. It's, you know, some of the things that they're taught indicates that there's more to it. But a lot of it's censored. And there's a lot of works in Chinese that needs to be translated into English. There's a tremendous amount of things. There's a history that would be unbelievable once a lot of this is deciphered and translated into, you know, English, for example, which goes back to the writings of Egypt and the Western cultures.
You got the Native Americans, you got the Asians, you got South Americans, but the big difference is if all this came from Asia, you would think that some of the cultures, some of the habits, some of the methods, some similarities in language would come forward. The Asians were and have always been incredible record keepers. They keep their genealogy going back generation after generation. Their language, their kanji writing is proliferated all over half the world. But when you get to Native Americans, there's no written language, no records whatsoever. They don't keep track of any genealogy. It's like these people were dropped out of space onto Earth. Mm-hmm. They just...
Well, the inner Earth, actually. A lot of them, they feel like they came up from the Earth. You're right, it's because their tradition is handed down literally through the spoken word. It's oral. It's oral traditions. The Chinese, for that, they're record keepers, they're discoverers. But there's a lot more to that culture that they're not telling their people. You know, there's a lot more to it because the history of them is when they put up that great wall and the emperor goes, okay, we're not going to contact anybody anymore. So much for the great, you know, the explorers that went around, you know, like Admiral He, who, you know, discovered, you know, or not so much discovered, but sailed to South America on his treasure ships. All of this. They're keeping a lot of this, a lot of the records from the people. They don't want them to know the real truth. So they're just giving them, okay, this is what's going on.
Alex writes me and asks me, Alex asked me, what can't they talk about? What 3T?
Oh, I forgot I'm in America. I can say it. I'm sorry. Tibet, Taiwan, and Tiananmen Square.
Oh, sure, yeah. I've been to Tibet. That's a tragedy, what's going on there. My goodness.
Yeah, I can't, I can basically, if I discuss that or get involved in that, I can lose my job.
Yeah, well,
because it's controversial. And the students will ask me about that. If a student approaches me, not in the classroom, but, I will express what the Western viewpoint would be in relation to this. The best I can.
I can't lose my job. I fired myself three times last week, and I had to hire myself back again. Tibet is the most unbelievable project since 1959.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I love your work there. I saw the video on there. That was great,
They've been building roads all over that country using Tibetan labor. It's a combination of sledgehammers, loafers, slacks, and Chinese heavy equipment. And those roads are built into the mountains of minerals, which they are stripping out of that country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really something. Yeah, when I arrived back in the States.
Well, then you got other parts of it. You got Tibet, you got Mongolia, you got Inner Mongolia. You have all this other area that's virtually unexplored to some extent too. We don't know exactly what's there. But that's where you talk to the locals from, and with the connections that I have while traveling through China, and my students, and I can make the local connections and get what the real legends are, and follow up, on that. Things about Genghis Khan, for example. All of this. And they have their legend stories. They have their Shangri-La. They have their lost horizons. They have that. It's a matter of getting a local to point you in the direction of it's over there type thing. But it's really interesting. It's just an amazing culture.
Well, it really is. When Marco Polo said when he returned from exploring China, as he sailed up the great rivers, he said, thank God the Chinese people are not warlike. We have the Chinese people, they were so scientifically advanced. Their architecture was amazing. The scope and the care, that they took when they built their cities, their bridges, their giant squares and unbelievable bridges and aqueducts and everything. Europe had nothing like this. When Marco Polo arrived, he basically said, these people are so advanced and yet so peaceful. If they were to venture out, they would just take over the whole world.
Oh, yeah. Well, so many things were discovered, not so much invented, but discovered, whether it be astronomy, the compass, mathematics, all of this. That's the dumbfounding thing in trying to educate and help my students learn. Is they can't see the forest through the trees. They go, you guys, you used to be an expressive culture. I mean, we learned from you. I mean, thank you. Ha, ha, ha. Very good. So I thank them. I mean, I'm a student of them. And they have to discover themselves now. That's what's happening. In the educational system, there is such a train wreck. They need to discover their past and bring it alive. And to become the explorers they were. And they learned very quickly. Believe me, these kids learned very quickly. Very humble, very nice kids.
Huh. Well, there are ancient secrets in China, though. And these are things that we in the West are just now, just because of the Internet and people are snapping pictures of it and sending out and saying, hey, look what I found. Is there a pyramid in China?
Oh, yeah, it's in Xi'an. I got students there. They're always inviting me to go down there and see the what they call the White Pyramids. They're not white, but they're covered by, grass. I mean, they're there. They're huge. And I have a number of students from Xi'an, and they always invite me to come down. Hey, Kevin, come on down. We want, welcome to my my hometown. That's there. So I never had the opportunity. I've been so busy. I only have so much time off during the year. And when you have 500 students per semester and they all want you to come to their hometown, you know, it's
well, I was in Chengdu, which is in Sichuan.
Okay, yeah, I've been there. Sure.
And, I mean, it's kind of out of the way. It's in the middle of a lot of people, but it's way down in the valley, just way off in the east. And it wasn't too far. I think it was like an hour and 20 minutes or something from, how do you pronounce that? Jiang?
Chengdu.
No, X-I-A-N-G.
Oh, Xian, but, Xian, like Xian. X-I-A-N is Xian.
Oh, okay.
I hope I'm pronouncing it right because my students will probably message me on QQ. It's not Xian. Yeah, I'm always being corrected. They say, Kevin, you speak American Chinese. That's okay.
I wanted to go see the pyramid, and I had a day. It was like a free day.
Absolutely. They have libraries, and they have off-the-beaten-path things that are supposed to be really interesting that no Westerner has really been, you know, allowed to see. So it takes what they call guanxi in order to do that.
It takes what?
Guanxi, G-U-A-N-X-I, guanxi, friendship. You have to get to know the locals. You have to get to know someone who knows someone that can, you know, you can, you know, go into the libraries and see where the things that we are interested in and what the radio program is about is there. But it's in Chinese and it hasn't been translated.
Right.
It's there.
So
it's there.
Read Chinese too?
Brooks, it's there. It's just not in our language, our English language.
You can read Chinese too?
No, I can read. I can read Pinyin, but I can read a little Chinese. I can read a little Chinese. It's very, there's a pattern to it. I understand older Chinese a little better because the language has evolved and it was a little bit more simpler back, you know, ancient times than it is now. And I'm having trouble. My eyes are getting, you know, a little older now. It's kind of difficult to see. But with, you know, how, you know, the configurations of the writings, but, there's a pattern to it. It's like anything else. If you understand the pattern of the language, you'll be able to read it, and it shouldn't be all that difficult. But ancient Chinese is a little bit easier to understand because the character itself doesn't have as many lines or hooks to it, and that's a little different. But it means the same thing. I mean, they're all. It has a pattern that allows to if you can pick it up. Allows for a good understanding.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about this pyramid. I've seen pictures of it from a distance. I've heard it was really secret. Who built the pyramid?
Who built the pyramid? Oh, wow. I forgot his name. I really don't know. I don't know exactly. Around the dynasty, I think it's the Huang Dynasty at the time was built, obviously, for an emperor. And that was actually the base for the first empress of China. They had an empress at one time. And I think, did you ever see the movie Mulan?
No, I remember
Mulan. It was a cartoon.
Mulan
Disney
Rouge.
Made a cartoon many, many years ago. Okay, it was called Mulan, and it had to do with a soldier girl, and there's a little bit of story. I think the pyramids were involved in that, but the pyramids are very old. They're obviously, they're not quite sure exactly how old these are. I haven't had the opportunity to really go down there and investigate. I haven't had the time.
Where are you going?
They're not quite sure who built them. They're not really, and there's conjecture involving what they were and what are involved. But inside where the emperor is buried, there's a river of mercury around it.
That's what I heard.
Above.
And that there were like big whale blubber lanterns.
It had to do with the Nazis back in World War II when they were involved in occultism and they were after this stuff. They were after the, to get this, the Vril, and what they tried to target was getting inside that pyramid and getting as much information as they could out of it, and they weren't successful in doing it. They were also in Tibet as well.
I imagine anybody that breaks into a pyramid that has been filled with the river of mercury for 1,000 years better have some special breathing apparatus and a Class C hazmat outfit, or they're not going to survive it.
Exactly. It's just like, but there's something occult to it, and it's something that they wanted to see what they can get from it in order to proliferate their ideals, whatever, you know, what those ideals were. But,
well,
you know, right now they're basically, if you look at the pyramids, they're basically mounds. I mean, at one time, you know, they were very tall and, you know, they're very tall in structure, very wide. But, you know, the original configuration is not what it was. It's just like the pyramids in Egypt, of which you've seen.
Or it's ones in South America. If you go see those in Mexico.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the pyramids in Egypt had a lapis lazuli stone on it. It was actually really beautiful. All we're seeing is blocks. But I was
the limestone had been stripped off a long time ago and used to build all kinds of buildings. That's what amazes me about the difference between the Chinese culture and the Egyptian culture. The Egyptians, when they stumbled upon the pyramids that were there, instead of revering them and trying to keep them intact, they stripped them like a bunch of scavengers. At least the Chinese haven't gone in and robbed this pyramid and tried to make a buck off of it. They're trying to keep it secret and reverent.
Yeah, they do. The Chinese are very protective of everything, and that's why it's very difficult to get into some areas. That's why we have to make friends. I have to make friends with, if I have a student that lives there or if I know someone, that's how we get into where you're not supposed to be. Or, you know, no Westerners ever. There are some temples that I wasn't allowed to enter into. There are temples that I went to, areas in China that no Westerner has ever been at all.
Like what?
It was in around Lijiang and Shandong. It was one area. And I know no Westerners have ever been there. And they would just look at you like, wow, what are you? Like you're from another world. They've never seen a foreigner. They know.
Sure.
Me. Oh, I swear to you. I swear to you, Brooks. I mean, I've literally had people that were riding their bikes run into the next car in front of them or a tree looking at me.
Wow.
Because they've never seen anything like me. They don't know. They've never seen a foreigner. I've had people that would just drop their agricultural tools and just open their mouth and just walk and just watch me walk by. Yeah.
Wow.
It's amazing.
You're brave areas. Enough to come this deep into China, or that they'd actually.
I guess so. I was never in fear. You know, when I'm in China, I just don't have a fear. It's relaxing. I just don't think about it. I used to notice people looking at me, but they're not going to do anything to me, and they're friendly.
Tell us about the places in China that you have been that would just amaze Westerners.
Amaze Westerners. Wow. That's about the entire country. If you want to go to Taishan, Mount Taishan is very famous. If you can climb to the top to that mountain and see the sunrise, that's awesome. That's awesome. There's so many forests, there's mountain ranges that just have such a spirituality to it, such a peaceful feeling to it. In and around, Weihai is one, northern Shandong is one, Qingdao is another, Laoshan, which is just, I believe, north of Qingdao, where they had the Olympics. There's so many places in the north. Harbin is one. Harbin, right during the wintertime, is so cold that they actually build and cut ice villages, ice sculptures.
Wow.
It's amazing. It's not just these small, you know, carvings. We're talking about buildings and hotels and all that kind of stuff in Harbin. I would recommend if anybody wants to see something fantastic, go to Harbin during the wintertime. It's just, to see the ice sculptures. But there's so much to the cultures there. I mean, go to Beijing, go to the Forbidden City. That's another thing. but also in the south too, in Guangxi, Guangxi province, and Guilin is one. During the summertime, the entire country is just amazing and just scenic value. There's so many places. I know I've traveled to, even Inner Mongolia. That's another place. I mean, that's the prairies, the grasslands, the horses. Just an amazing, warm people. I have students there, Mongolians.
Did you have any epiphanies in any of these particular areas? You say that there's a high spirituality in the land. And I know this is something.
In a sense, yes. I would say yes. And there's yet to come. You know, there are some areas that I know that I would like to be now that they're definite. You know, there would be definitely some sort of resonation. But, yeah, you do have it, and I have dreams about it. And that's probably why I stayed as long as I did, almost 4 years. You know? You do have that type of feeling. Not everybody resonates. You know, there. Many do. Many go there and never come back, believe it or not. There are many Westerners that go there, and they never return to their, you know, their native land because it resonates with them. And it's interesting. It's not so much an epiphany. It's, Brooks, it's a way of life. Once it becomes a way, we're discovering things at the Western end here of things, and we're thinking, wow, this is really cool. To them, it's a way of life, whether it be Qigong or the martial arts or Tai Chi. And I've watched many of these, you know, demonstrations of this, of the people in the park doing their Tai Chi. And it's a way of life for them. They wake up and they do this, and it's with them all the time. If you want to call it an epiphany, it's with them all the time. It's their way of life. And if we can get that inculcated in us, our reference point, then we would understand there's so much I need to learn from my students and my friends there that they've been trying to teach me. Can't you see this? Can't you see this? I said, no. But, you know, they do because they live it. They live it. They don't have to worship it. They don't, you know, they live it, which is
well, I know sometimes people fall into patterns and rituals that keep them out of trouble and avoid conflict and these mm-hmm. kinds of things. I have several chatters who are asking me to get back on the subject of the pyramid. One of them's gone to goal. He says it's confidential at a very high price, and they want to know more about the pyramid. They're very curious about it.
You can do some research on it. You can do on the pyramids themselves. You'd have to go there. I mean,
when are we going?
If you resonate with it, it's excuse me.
When are we going?
Well, whenever you want to go. In fact, we can go tomorrow. Let's go. Get our visas ready.
You have friends that can get us there because, you know, I'm kind of known for getting pictures of things I'm not supposed to get, and I want to bring them back. I just feel drawn to these kinds of mysteries of the earth. I want some pictures of that pyramid. I want to know what's going on.
Oh, there's many things that are going there, many things that are going on. And that's just one area of the country. You know, the entire country resonates at some point, but the pyramids are just one of them. They're not so much, you'd have to go there, and we can go anytime. We just get our visas, and I've got friends, and I've got guides, and my students are asking me every day, when you're coming back, when you're coming back. It's just, you know, where do you want me to go, you know? I said, I want to go to Tien and see the pyramids. They'll go, okay, let's go. Because they know people. You'll be able to get on the inside of the inside. And
well, that's where I want to get. Now, I've got to go back to China here very shortly for some electric car business because our supplier is in Jiangsu City. And I'm going to spend some time in China, and I want to make a couple of days. I want to carve a couple of days out to put my my book bag on with my cameras in it, and I'm going to hike up there. I'm going to find out, and it would sure be a lot easier if I didn't have to ride a bicycle the whole way. If I could get some inside help, so I'm serious about this. Let's go find out.
Well, we'll do it. Yeah, it's just a matter of you know, when you want to do it, and we can go. So
I'm definitely going to
say I have so many friends there. It's almost wherever you want to go, we'll go. You know, and they are so welcoming. They are so welcoming there. And they miss me. They want me to come back. So there's so many stories about the pyramids. You have to remember, a lot of this is in Chinese, okay? They have to go through an interpreter. My student would have to, you know, talk. But there are legends. There are legends that no Westerner knows about. And the only way of doing it is you got to go there. You have to go there. You have to feel it, resonate with it.
Well, help us out a little bit, because, I mean, we're not getting on the plane tomorrow. What exactly would we see if we went there? I mean, help draw a little picture for us.
What would you see?
Yeah.
At the pyramids?
Right.
You're going to see mounds. You're going to see basically grass mounds. You know, it's not going to be anything. Don't even think about Egypt, you know, because it's not like that. It's
They're not tall like that. They're
area.
Low and wide.
Because they put grass. They don't want you to see it, for one thing. They don't want you to see it from the air, so it's like a grassland with a big hump. But there
well,
are
I know, you know, in
ways.
Mexico, the wind blows around a lot, and the dust gets up on the pyramids, and then it rains, and the seeds that are dropped by birds grow. And if you go to Teotihuacan, you can see dozens and dozens of pyramids off to the left if you're sitting on top of the Temple of the Moon, and they're covered in grass. They literally have to beat the wilderness back with a stick, because these things get covered so quickly. So it might not be a clandestine way of keeping it hidden. They just might not have a budget to clean it off.
The Chinese are very, they're not ones to advertise things like that, which is kind of weird, because they want to impress you. I mean, look at the Olympics. Look at all the buildings. I mean, there are these big buildings, the Great Wall, everything. They want to impress you with certain things. You know, but when it comes to something like that, they're pretty low key, because they know that there's more to it than meets the eye.
Well, maybe,
and
but you don't see any archaeology.
What's inside of it is a big secret.
There's no archaeology going on in China like there is in Egypt. I mean, Egypt, they don't have any oil. They don't have any natural resources except sand. And the only thing that they've got are their antiquities. And believe me, they're using heavy equipment, and they're digging out cities as fast as they can get to them so that they
can
bring more tourists into their country. But there's no archaeology like that going on in China.
No, they can't. I mean, it's really, they're very protective of everything, you know, and they don't want to, you got to be respectful of it, because there are religious issues involving some of this stuff. But there's also a possibility of a paranormal issue with it, too, that they're not letting everybody know about. And there are records, and there are some things about the area there that we don't, you know, that Westerners don't know about, because it hasn't been translated from their written works. There's a tremendous amount, there's a library of their writers, their poets, their historians, whether it be Confucius or Lao Tzu, all of these, they write about this stuff. And a lot of it hasn't been translated. And that's why we're missing the history of, you know, the Qian pyramids and what their meaning is. And
it sounds to me, with your skill level and your connections, that's a history that should be written and told to the world.
Absolutely, you know, absolutely. I've got students that are, you know, I told them I've been working on this for, at least three years with this. And they want to know, too, believe it or not, because they're not informed. That's another thing the Chinese government doesn't do, is inform their citizens of what's really happening. And when you enter into an area like the Xi'an area or those pyramids, that's a different resonation. It's something that there's something there, you know. And there's other parts of that country that the same thing is happening. But they're not going to advertise that. You've got to come there and see it. And the invitation's there. I mean, they've been open for 20 years or more.
Well, I think we should take them up on the invitation. I definitely think there's something there. One of my chatters is asking me to ask you about openings in China that you have found.
Openings? I won't even tell you the secrets on here. I have found some. There's a few of them. There are openings there. But at this point, I can't, from me personally, I can't say exactly where they're at and who's involved because I would compromise them. But there are openings. There's definitely an opening. Like I said, China doesn't advertise things. You have to go there, and you have to experience it. You got to, you know, and that's what's wonderful about teaching. That's why we need, you know, Western teachers over there. You can teach, you can explore, you can do a lot of things, and there are openings there. They're just not telling you that because they don't, you know, again, they're a very shy people. They're very respectful, and they don't want to lose face. So you have to, there are certain Guangxi friendships you have to develop and in order to see these places. But they're there, believe it or not. They are there. And well, I've come up upon a few of them, and then you hit me right in the third eye with some of this.
Oh, I got it.
Yeah, but it's there. It's there. It's just a matter of no one really, you know, they think of China being mysterious. Well, it is and it isn't. The invitation is there for us to go. And we can go, whether it's, you know, and see.
Are there openings to the inner earth in China?
Yes, there are.
How do you locate them? I mean, is there are they a local mystery? Are they in a mountain, in a valley, in the bottom of a lake, a river?
You just answered it.
Brooks, okay.
You just answered it. It's like asking how do I improve my spoken English. Yeah, they're there. There are the legends, the locals, there are stories. I mean, I've sat down and just go to these villages. They're just way out of these places with my friends, and we'd sit and just talk, and I'd listen, and they're describing things that we're talking about. You know, it's just, you know, there's more to this. It's just unbelievable, some of this stuff. The locals are so friendly. They're so welcoming. And they have stories to tell, just like, you know, like we do. And it's real. When you go and check this out or follow the guide, and yeah, it's there. That stuff is real and it's there. It's just a matter of getting to it.
Well, and, what are the stories
Chinese
that you heard from locals? I mean, have they gone
too
into the inner earth? Have they had inner earth beings come out and meet with them? Have they received messages?
At that point, no, I don't know at this point. I haven't encountered anyone that's actually met anyone that's come out. There are three areas of that country that I'm going to investigate and see if it's a possibility that this may happen. There are three definitely, there are definitely something there. Some of these stories have to do with legends, similar to what we're talking about, because if there is an inner earth presence, it's going to be worldwide, okay? We understand that. And that influence is in their artwork. It's in their artwork, their writings. I've seen things that are like, this isn't Chinese, what is this? You know, and it's in there. It's a lot of it's around their temple areas, and it's in their villages, and it's just on. It's carvings. It's like petroglyphs. It's things like that. And there are also caves. You know, if you're in South China, there's caves, and there's caves all over China, and these are entrances. It's a matter of. I haven't found anything, and that's what why I want to get back there because I kind of gave that assignment to my students to help me locate some of these places. But the Xian pyramids are just part of it. They're just part of the story, the legends of how we came to be, and the creation process. And there's so much written in that language, and there's so much that's described on their artwork that it tells a story, and you have to go there, and it'll point you to where these things are, just like Tibet, you know, where you were. But there are openings, there are there are paranormal things that do occur, and it's an exciting place to be. It really is.
Well, I'm excited about it. I know when I went to Tibet, the first thing that I noticed when I got off the plane in Lhasa, we shuffled our way to the hotel. We were at 11,500 mm-hmm. feet. Our guide said, look, don't walk, don't pick up your luggage, just shuffle to the hotel and go to bed so that you can acclimate to the altitude. Well, I didn't think 11,000 feet was that high anyway, but I did what I was told. But when I walked in the hotel, right there in front of me was the symbol of Tibetan Buddhism. And my goodness, it looked just like a hollow earth. I mean, there it was right in front of you. And it was everywhere, all through Tibetan Buddhism. When I went to China, however, I did not mm-hmm. see that much iconic stuff. I saw a lot of architecture. I saw mm-hmm. statues. I saw, mm-hmm. you know, gargoyles and warriors and things like that. But I didn't see the icons like you see in Tibet. It was so mm-hmm. strange, like it was antiseptic almost.
Yeah, you have it. Yeah, I've seen it. I was in some places in Shandong where I first was at. There's temples and there's that. Well, actually, in a city called Nanshan, Nanshan, Nanshan. There's a big Buddha. There's a huge Buddha, and it takes a long time to. In fact, I'm gonna send you the photo when I find it. You gotta climb these steps all the way up to the top, and it's the big Buddha. But there are a lot of that. If you can locate the temples, that's kind of the key, is locating this and talking to them, because it exists, it's there, it's just finding it, and it's knowing who to talk to, it's finding these friends, and they'll take you there. They'll take you there. A lot of it's, you know, you'll see your stone carvings, you'll see your idols, you'll see all of this stuff, and it tells a story about, you know, no doubt it has to do with the inner earth. Because I've asked them, because one of my questions had to do with why I was there. I wanted to do some things involving what I was seeing in my mind. And that's what drew me to China, you know, of all places. And that's how I became involved in going to China and teaching and learning and trying to find these places and following the star pattern and all of this. To see where these things existed and what mountain ranges to look for. And it's there. It's kind of a cool thing. And
it was just the environment that I was in. It was very businesslike, and I felt kind of funny asking them questions about archaeology and ancient history and inner earth things. I concentrated mostly on buying cars and getting ready to launch our company. We do have Robin on line one. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi, Robin. How are you?
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Brooke. Hi. I've got a couple questions to ask you, Kevin.
What's your question?
I've got more than one, but can you give me a more detailed feel of, like, when you were searching for these areas, these openings? They're not normal openings like caves, like you just walk into where you would see, you know, on the side of a mountain, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, a description of it? Well, to some extent, did you ever see the movie The Shadow with Alec Baldwin?
No.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Watch it. It's about how your mind is clouded.
Can you describe it?
How can I describe it? Well, as far as the opening, or what?
Yeah, describe it like describe the opening. Describe it like I'm a blind person, and I'm with you. And
you
now
are?
Describe for me what I'm seeing and feeling. Yeah, because I'm a listener right now, so I can't see what you see. I haven't been when you've been,
maybe telepathically
so I need you to describe.
You're probably
for me,
looking at something very holographic. Something that would be ultra-dimensional, something that you would have to tune to, and you can see it.
Yeah.
You'd have to resonate with that, and you just can't walk in there and go, I'm inside a cave or something. But it's more or less, it's almost like how can I describe it? All of a sudden you're there, okay? What would be a term?
So
you're
almost
like a shadow runner, I guess. because it's not something that's going to come out at you and it's there. You're going to have to feel it, and then you'll see it. Because it'll
well, have to be in a state of being that
your entire emotional content. What's that?
Okay, so I'd have to be in a state of being where I'm kind of just feeling, right? Like a more of a meditative state.
Well, you could. You could, but because you would. The reason why you would be there is because of that anyway. You know, you would be drawn to that area, and you would see it.
Okay.
It's like anything. If you went to Karnak, Egypt, or wherever, or, you know, Valley of the Kings, and you, oh, wow, boom, you know, I wasn't expecting it, but somehow you unconsciously resonated that because that's part of your being. Your aura, which Brooks and I talked about, will detect that. Yeah.
Well,
you'll detect that.
Yeah, when my soulmate and I were in Egypt, we were at Karnak, and just looking at the hieroglyphs, okay,
mm-hmm.
Triggered, just like you said, mm-hmm. like a DNA reaction, and
mm-hmm.
memories and or remembrances started flooding in, and very quickly, very fast. So that was more in that sense. At that time, was different than the other times that we've experienced our spiritual life together. But in that sense, when I'm going to China and I'm going to be there, and if I'm triggered. This is not going to be, I'm not going to be looking at hieroglyphs. I'm going to be in a location where I feel a strong sense, like a magnetic grid type pull, that'll start to activate.
It's possible we may enter into what is known as an earth gate or a possible vortex. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And
you have to remember that the earth is polyhedral. It's like a dodecahedron. It's not just. These grid lines function on different, you know, different ultra-dimensional features, and they may not apply to where you're at, but it's there. Okay, there is a power grid there.
And you feel the pull, the body feels.
Yeah, you'll enter into it. Yeah, you will.
And like, what sensations would I start experiencing once entering it?
It would be a different experience for everyone. You know, it's based upon your individual senses, what you'll see.
What was your experience like when you entered?
What was my experience like?
Yeah. Describe yours.
You want to describe what I saw?
Yeah.
Actually, it was a library, believe it or not.
Really.
It was about 3 years ago, actually. Excuse me, about mm-hmm. 3 years ago. It was definitely, because I had an artifact with me, for one thing. That was a key, too. I had an artifact that originated from that. So that is also a key, too. If you have an artifact that is drawn to a certain area, you're going to resonate with that, and that's also something that will draw you to where you need to be. And the problem I had was trying to play this or try to access what's in it as far as the matrix of it in order to enter further into where, you know, I wanted to go, which I didn't go any further. So that's the key of trying to, you know. What's that?
What stopped you from going any further?
Well, what stopped me?
Yeah.
No, well, I think I got overpowered. I think I kind of overpowered mentally, and I think I may have been apprehensive. No, not afraid, but a bit apprehensive. And I think I withdrew.
Because it was new.
And yeah, because I wasn't sure, and I needed to kind of, you know, reconcile what was happening, what I did see, write it down, and. You know, like a language, you know, and try to understand it more before I continue. I was a bit apprehensive because it never happened to me on this point at this degree. You know, at that magnitude. So I had a come back and write down what I saw. And
what did you write down?
Try to go back again.
Guys, we only have about 2 minutes of this hour, so I just want to let you know it's a great line of questioning, but I have another caller waiting on line two, and I'd like to squeeze him in before the end of the hour.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Bye.
You're very welcome. Thomas, line two, you're on the program. Welcome. Oh, Thomas is gone. Come on.
I'm
oh,
here.
Oh, my goodness. Is Thomas there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay, Thomas. Real quick, we've got about 2.5 minutes in this hour. Do you have a question?
Well, I was just kind of wondering, what stopped you guys, or what is stopping you guys from trying to fly into inner Earth? I mean, the Yamal is not seeming to be financed very well. I was wondering if you guys have thought about flying in there or trying to.
Yes, of course we have. We could raise, it's about $65,000 to take a flight. We checked into a 727. It's the only plane that has the distance that can make it up there and back a round trip. However, the pilot will not fly any lower than 17,000 feet, so we would not see anything but clouds at that height, I'm afraid.
Gotcha. You guys are talking about China. Have you looked on Google Earth at some of the amazing things that they have on there?
In China?
On YouTube, it was listed as weird places.
Well, yes, I have. Can you name one? What one you're referring to?
I'm not sure what the name of it is, but it's the one with all the lines. I mean, it's like huge. I mean, it's like ginormous. And it's
what area of China, possibly?
What do the lines look like?
It looks
what
like.
What region?
It's like
it south or north or west or?
It's right in the center, actually. And. Trying to see if there was a name by it, but I can give you the coordinates if you guys want that. It's like north 40 degrees, 27 feet, 39 inches by east 93 degrees, 23 feet, 33 inches. And there's a couple of these things, and they're just, you can tell that they're very old, and they have like mounds of dirt covering them, but you can see it. And then between the two strange things, there's like a gigantic airfield that you can tell is also very old. That looks like it had to be at least World War II or older. And I just wondered if you guys had seen any of that stuff. And it's kind of like right in the middle of China.
In the middle of China. Wuhan, possibly.
I don't see any.
A little along a river? A little along a river or anything?
Not really.
Okay.
Looks like there might have been an old river there at one time because there's a lot of matter there. Mm-hmm. But if you look up those coordinates and see that sometime, I mean, the thing is just so big for people to walk around. I mean, the roads are really dinky compared to mm-hmm. how big the lines are. And this thing's like a big square with all these geographic shapes in it. And it's pretty mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But did you
I'd like
say
to see
that?
I'd
actually,
like to see a photo of the area. I'll
yeah,
if I knew what province it was in, if I knew what province it was in, I can track it.
Yeah. Well, if you guys got those coordinates I wrote, you'll be able to find it pretty easy.
I got it. North 40, East 93. We'll look it up. Got to take a break.
Okay.
Right. We'll be back in about 3 minutes with more X Squared Radio and Kevin David. We'll be right back with more X Squared Radio.
Hello?
Welcome back to X Squared Radio, coming to you live from east of the Appalachians. I want to let you know that Remembering the Future is going to be up for sale. The ebook next week, next Sunday, will have a special for you. The price will be $7.95. It's a 220-page book that has the toolkit you need. So be the first to read it by listening to next week's program. There was a short 55-page preview of this in Volume 3 of The Ark of Millions of Years. Now you can get the full story in your hands. Believe me, the discoveries in this book will shake the pillars and throw open the windows, so don't miss this opportunity. Now, the printed version will be out in 3 months. There'll be a special that goes along with the ebook that will allow you to pick that up for a good discount, but you can get a head start, so stay tuned. Also, Twitter. Don't forget to follow Brooks Agnew on Twitter. Things are happening so fast now with the Expedition and the Electric Car Company and the conferences coming up that you can't wait until next Sunday to hear about them. You got to keep up. So get them as fast as they happen by following me on Twitter. All you have to do is put in Brooks Agnew. It'll find me, no problem. And you can follow, and I will several times a day send out notices of what's going on, and you can keep up with the pace. Plus, there will be some very special savings and offers on upcoming books and movies. We'll give away some free archive subscriptions, so don't miss out. And please spread the word. It's free and spam-free guaranteed, okay? Spam-free guaranteed. Twitter Brooks Agnew. My guest tonight is one of the explorers into language and the root relationships of humankind. Spent 4 years in China teaching English to Chinese students. Welcome back, Kevin David. How are you?
Hi.
I know we didn't lose you over one song, but we're trying
That's
to keep
okay.
pace.
That's okay. I love music. That's part of my movie project is working on music.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about your movie project coming up.
Oh, this is something I started many years ago. It started with an ancient language, believe it or not, probably about 15 years ago. I started to do some self-discovery, the direction where I needed to go in life, or what I was directed to do, I guess. And I started talking to some friends and started reading some, you know, it has to do with synchronicities. And we all know what that is, okay? You know, being in a certain place, meeting certain people, doing certain things. For a reason, whether it be good or bad or whatever. There's a reason why we're here. There's a reason why I'm on the show tonight after, you know, so many years of investigating. But the movie project developed or evolved from when I was just doing meditation and just coming to the point where I had a trust, you know, not so much in, you know, or in myself, but also to release the fears, because what's happening in our world is that we have so much fear and ego and things that are controlling us. So I had to free myself from that mindset in order to understand what brought me to this point. So the movie project is actually a point in time that I entered into that took me back, you know, like light speed into a distant past. And I had some reference points, but I knew what I was experiencing was older than what we were led to believe. And even what some of these things involving Atlantis or Mu in ancient history, as far as we know it, I was sent back in my mind to a time where, you know, I wanted to actually learn. I want to know the origins. I want to know I want to see some evidence of what this was, whether it be, you know, whatever. So I had to open up my mind to that and be receptive and just trust that. So then I started actually speaking a language that I wasn't quite sure what it was. It sounded Native American, and no one that I knew of understood it. And I wrote it down. It was in symbols, too. And I was only looking at it through a three-dimensional viewpoint, and that, you know, beyond that, until I saw the movie Contact with Jodie Foster, and I go, okay, what I see is I have to view this with light, sound, form, and color. So I had to view the language differently. And from then on, that's how the language progressed. And it had to do with, you know, a past life as well, a language that we're all familiar with, where we came from as a family. And the website that I have has to do with that. It has to do with a time of creation between two people and ones who lived a lifetime. And I experienced that when I was in China. And it had to do with two people that were very much in love, but they couldn't be with one another. But they would meet each lifetime. Each lifetime they would meet. And then they'd meet each other, fall in love, and not so much the happy ending to it, but there was a movie that was made about 3 or 4 years ago called Shenhua with Jackie Chan. And that movie resonated with me to the point where I could never get the soundtrack out of my mind and what the storyline was about. And I encourage listeners to watch that movie called Shenhua, or it's called The Myth with Jackie Chan. I think he made it about 4 years ago. And it had to do with that time period. Now, what happened to him, to some extent, in the movie, happened to me. It was almost like a mirror with the person that I was with when I started to experience more things. But the movie has to do with that. It also has to do with a relationship between the Chinese and the Native American cultures and how we can find that lost horizon, you know, whether, you know, the inner earth, whatever that horizon is, and getting back to our origins and reconciling those feelings that we have. The soundtrack that I'm developing has to do with a lot of the tones used in a language. So each note of the soundtrack will resonate probably with your third eye or some emotional content of your body. So not only you'll be having the visual experience of the story, but you're going to feel the music. You're going to feel the music. It's not just going to go in your ears, and it's something that's completely different. So the soundtrack of the movie is as important as the storyline itself between the two lovers and how this adventure unfolds through the generations of time. And it's a romantic adventure, and it's something that I want to use everything that I've known in languages and how to present this story at a higher level than what Shenhua is. Shenhua, or the myth, is just gives you an idea, just a glimpse into what, you know, that is. That is something that just that's how it started. It just started with learning, you know, the language development and something that I was doing at that time almost 15 years ago. But I'm looking for ones to get involved in a movie and to bring a story to life, because it's something that's almost a gift that I would like to give to humanity. You know, it's something that it's so wonderful that you all should experience it. And because we do have lovers, we do have ones that we've traveled through time with, whether it be, you know, our eternal lover, soulmate, if you want to call it that. But it's that being, that duality that we have, that we have to share our lives with, that we resonate with. Our family, where we came from, how we meet our family members through the synchronicities of the moment, especially now, how we're interconnected to each other. And that's really the value of the movie, is how we're going to interconnect, how we're going to interact with one another, including the person that we love very much. And that's how that movie should resonate with you. It's something that not only the light, the colors, the sound, the forms, the story, it's actually the music. It's having you create your own music with the person that you love very much. And the title of the movie is As Long As Forever Is. And it's something that I thought would be an appropriate title that involved my girlfriend, Kylie Jianhua, and For As Long As Forever Is. And that's a whole story. So if you go to the website, that would probably give you a better idea of what the story is all about.
And what is the website?
I think, let's see here, I can... It's kind of a long website. I would have to type it out on Skype and give it to you.
Okay. Well,
yeah. It's
so the movie is about two people who keep meeting lifetime after lifetime. They run into each other in mortality, but mm-hmm. what is it? Life obligations? Is it slavery? Is it differences in race? Differences in economics that keeps them apart? What keeps them apart?
It's almost like love is what it is. It's like they're light beings in a sense in love. Okay,
and they so come love to, is keeping them apart.
Well, no, it's actually how they're discovering their essence together. They have to experience the emotions of love. What keeps them apart is just how they're going to be developing as far as their character, learning trust, courage, patience, just attributes that we need to work on to be more patient, to be more understanding with each other. And they learn that. Now, the story is based upon, actually, in some ways, my girlfriend, myself, and being kept apart and learning patience and learning how to deal with, the values of love, the good and the bad, and things along that line. So they're very much creators and creations on a journey, and they're finding out that they were the legends of the Lost Horizon, of a time where we came from originally, and they're experiencing the human journey in order to become more complete in their love for one another. And so many times we just take each other for granted. And what do we learn from the experiences? What do we learn from our relationships? So even though they're apart, they're always married. Now, you have that sense of feeling with someone that, hey, I'm so deeply in love with you, I would never leave you. Well, you never do, because it's eternal, because you'll find each other in another lifetime. Or perhaps you were with someone that you resonate with. So, and maybe one time you were lovers. But we're family. It's about family. It's about bringing the human family together as one in a pure love. So there's a lot more to the movie, except besides two lovers, but it's about the human family coming together as one, as far as our place that we live in, the planet Earth, how we can become a better people together, how we can get along together. And it's a journey that comes full circle. Experiencing many lifetimes is leading to us to this point in time, which is a critical moment in human history. So how are we going to connect together? How are we going to find our family? How are we going to get along? How are we going to love our mate better than we are now? And trust one another and have that, well, and let go of our fears and ego.
Well, define trust. I mean, are we just talking about two souls out of all the billions, trillions of souls in the universe that have to trust one another? Are we talking about trusting a race of people? Are we talking about excluding all other beings in the universe for one single one, and then when you can't have that one, you just live your life in despair your whole life and die in ignominy?
It's a representation of everything. It's a representation of everything. It's everything that you're not going to have that despair, but you're going to have that. It's basically, in a sense, a representation of the universe, that one song. Now, the universe, well, that's Latin, isn't it? One song. That's what it's all about, is creating that one song. We speak about the universe. Well, do you really know what that means? Well, it means universe, one song.
Huh.
One way of doing it. And that's what the harmonic accord is creating that. And the human experience deals with that. So we may have to have these tragedies come, but at the same time, we're stronger. We're stronger in character as a result of certain experiences.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we're familiar with that. You hunker down and take the lashes and bear under it and you know, dig your fingers into the soil and keep moving forward, no matter what the rain or the mud or the responsibilities that are placed upon you or the whip that's laid to you. Of course, we all do that with our daily lives. Our whole lives are have to. We taste this every day as we struggle from paycheck to paycheck, or family vacation to family vacation. We're one fingernail above homelessness across this whole nation. We feel it. Of course we feel it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I can't agree more with that. So it kind of gives like a hopeful feeling when you see a movie like this, because it's not so much despair as it is. There's a lot of emotional content that we need, because going back to Emoto's study about water, and we're water, and our thoughts create how we feel. And if we can keep that perpetual love going, that would be something that would connect us even more to each other and solve the issues that we have. Because everybody's going all these different directions, and you know, they have these issues they need to solve, and they're awakening, they got to reconcile these emotions and try to get us on track, try to get us to the point where if we can recognize the beginning, we can agree upon something. The only thing we agree upon, all of us right now, is for the most part, we wake up in the same default world. Pretty much. We wake up and it's basically what we got. So we can agree upon that. So what would be great if we can agree upon solving the issues that we have and, you know, having the guidance, seeking the guidance that we had from our ancestors help us along. Because they left us gifts. They left us treasures to be found. So it's not just finding the pyramids. It's finding out the treasures that are involved with those things that we find. Those are the treasures. That's something that's inside of us. We have to discover that in order for us to be happy, in order to change things and use that thought process to unite the people, unite humanity, and solve the issues that we have. And that's what's left behind. I mean, they left those cultures, and as an earth explorer like yourself, archaeo explorers, we have generations that have passed before us that have left us things to find. So we can use these for our benefit, for the benefit of humanity, or for the benefit of humanity and the earth. And that's what's the beauty of it, is that, you know, we left it for ourselves. It's like leaving a time capsule, you know. Going back in the time, say, hey, you know, the only problem is I don't remember exactly where I put my time capsule because I've got amnesia. You know? So that's something that we need to find. We need to find that time capsule and resonate with that and pass it on to the next and our families, our families that were back in the generations. We have identifying marks. Our DNA is our library. All of this we need to reconcile. And we can solve the issues, and we're happy. And that's the most important thing, is be happy. That's what my students tell me. Be happy, be happy, be happy. Generate that emotional content of positive things, positive emotions. Even though there are negative things, we can change it around.
I understand. I just, I guess what the world is trying to do, and what I see in the news, what I hear from people when I interview them or when I just meet them on the street, they're trying to balance things. Sure, they feel they really want to pursue love. They really want to be in love. They really want to be with the person that they love. But they cannot, because the responsibilities of what they're doing, whether they're in school or providing for their kids or providing for their ailing parents, or they have employees that are their responsibility, they're struggling, as I said, from paycheck to paycheck. They see their 401ks irresponsibly squandered by brokers and financial analysts and managers who don't know their ass from a hole in the ground. And they're just struggling with all these things. And then they're trying to weave love into all of that. So we have, you know, on the one hand, the reality of bricks and mortar, and on the other hand, a reality of love and passion. How do we balance these two? How do you balance them in your film? How do you make the music and the film give the people 90 minutes of escape from what is out in the daylight?
We have what is known as, there's a story of the two wolves. It's a Cherokee wisdom story. That's to do with the yin yang, the balance. We have to think in terms of soft and hardness. There are some attributes that are negative to some extent, and then you get your positive in, your positive attributes. How do we balance the negative with the positive? You know, because there's so much issues going on. Because we create these things. We create this problem. We create the world we live in. We create what's happening here.
But once it's created, it's just an avatar that you can turn off. It keeps going. It's alive.
Yeah, it is. And it's how we create these things. How does this monster create? How did Earth get away from what it was? That's the question. That's how are you gonna be able to pay these bills? How are you gonna be able to do all this stuff? And it has to do with being locked in a mindset that you have to pretty much try to have a positive, have courage, believe in yourselves, have that vision board of I'm gonna change this. If you look at everyone's lives, or many people's lives, not everyone, but when you look at your life, think of the things that are causing that negative part, okay? Look at the balance. How can I improve in this area with my relationships? Did I buy a house that I completely couldn't afford to begin with? Why do I, and you want me to feel sorry for you because you decided to build a house, a beautiful house next to a volcano, and you have lava running through your living room? I'm supposed to feel sorry for you?
Yeah.
Come on. There are some decisions that humanity makes that cause, it's called cause and effect. You cut down the rainforest, guess what? I teach my students that. It's cause and effect. It's cause and effect. It's cause and effect. You have to sit and analyze what you're doing. There are many people that they make these decisions, based upon, the information they think, that they want rather than what, it's something that would be for the good of everyone. So it's also that thinking that we've got to get back to the community of thinking as far as one. That's what the Chinese do. That's why they call it communism. It's more or less, bureaucratic capitalism. But the essence of communism is community. It's how these kids get along and they're happy. It's a different experience. I've been in China for 4 years. I think I saw two guns, for one thing. You don't have guns there. So weapons are non-existent. I have maybe a knife, but for the most part, there's no guns. So I feel safe there. That's a culture that functions with no weapons as far as guns for the average citizen. We live in a culture that, let's look around. There's a lot of threats that cause injuries. So we have to eliminate that. We have to eliminate, so we can have that peace and security and learn from the past, learn what the ancients are trying to tell. The inner earth, the ones that we want to discover, they're going to say, put down the guns. Think about it. You're going to have peace and security based upon, a culture that's going to have to say that enough's enough. We're going to have to work together. That's the mindset. You have to balance. It's out of balance. How do we get it back in balance? So we have to, look at it, have a self-talk. Say, hey, we have to get along. Go next door. Go meet all your neighbors. Be more expressive. Start using the yin more, soft. So those are attributes that we need to do, Brooks. We need to manifest that on a daily level, and that's what that's what I've learned from the Chinese. They're very the ones that my students, my kids, they're very soft, and I've learned a lot from them. And we have to have that community thinking in order for everything to get better. And the ones that don't want to cooperate, well, what are you going to do? That's what the governments are for. But I firmly believe it. You have to believe in yourself, and you have to believe in
The Chinese people have a different perspective than we do. They don't at least the ones that I know, don't think of things in terms of a single lifetime. Or if they do, it is an entire lifetime. With Americans, with the society that we're in, you know, if it doesn't happen this afternoon, it's not soon enough. I mean, come on, I find myself patting my foot and snapping my fingers in front of the microwave.
Yeah,
I don't even buy green bananas. So I understand there's a different mindset to it. The Chinese people are very patient. If I can't do it, then my children will do it. If my children won't do it, then maybe my grandchildren would do it. You know, it's inches by inches. I watched Tibetans who had finished a pilgrimage from their hometown to Lhasa that took them 2 years on their knees, prostrating themselves on the ground with wooden blocks under their hands because it would wear the skin off of their hands as they went like human inchworms from their hometown, kneeling and standing, kneeling and laying down and standing again all the way to Lhasa. Now that is a lifetime of dedication, just to be able to get to the temple to put some yak butter in the candle and put your forehead against the feet of the Buddha. Yes. Americans don't have that kind of dedication. We would never take a task on like that. If we can't get it paid off 90 days, same as cash, we just charge it, overcharge it, and then file bankruptcy. That's our way. It is a different way, and it's killing us.
It is. It is. And we don't listen to our Native American brothers. They're here. They're a treasure. They're a treasure. Listen. They're here. What do we got? We got them on reservations. We got it's just unbelievable. Check, you know, the history of what the white Europeans did to the Native Americans. You want to talk about a Holocaust? You know, let's talk about what's happening in the backyard. And that's something that we have a treasure. We have the Native Americans. We have that consciousness. They're guardians of that. And that's what we should learn. Learn from them and learn from one another. And
what is the lesson that they're trying to teach us? Are they so afraid of their government that they can't uncover a pyramid in their own backyard and share it with the world? Or are they being private? Are they just being reverent? What is the truth?
It's really it's getting them to talk and just really open up. It's very difficult. It's very difficult because you know, it could be something spiritual. It could be something that because they also live in a certain amount of fear too within their government. There are some things that if they do, they could get in a lot of trouble with. You know, as a Chinese national. I'm not quite sure exactly at this point. I know they're very shy and they're very not, you know, you gotta really get to know them, in order for them to open up. And then they'll open up. But they also have this fear factor too because they're so conditioned, to think in straight lines. You know,
well,
they don't know they don't do that.
They don't.
In reality, I gave them an exam to see how I can teach them, and they're pretty much they think in terms that they want to think outside of the lines, but they're too afraid. And it could be something that if they say something, it could be a reprisal. I really don't know exactly, you know, what it could be. It's like proselytizing with the Bible there. You don't do it. just the government, you know, has rules and laws against that.
Sure.
You can have a Bible, you can talk about it, but you know, you can't go door to door and proselytize because, you know, that's something you can't do. So they do control. They do control the mindsets of the people and influence them, and it stays with them all their lives. And you have to remember, it's one race of people there, you know, the Chinese. And it's easy to control that in America where they call it megua, melting pot. So it's a lot more, it's difficult for us as our, you know, the people here because we come from all over the world with different ideas and different ways of doing things. In China, it's different. It's one people that think the same way. So that's the difference. So it'd be very difficult to do what they do here. But we do have the Native Americans, and they've been here for a long time, too, and no one's listening. And that's something that is our treasure in our backyard that we should think about and talk with them, because they're our brothers and sisters.
Well, yes, and, you know, we have so many levels, so many feints within feints. While I was in China, so was Pelosi. I found the place very progressive. I found the whole place under construction. I found everybody working hard. Generally, I found everybody smiling. I didn't see any human rights violations whatsoever, and I was all over the place, even in the countryside. However, while Pelosi was there and trying to open up doors of trade or solve one problem or another between governments, our press was beating her up every hour for not making open statements against what? Against human rights violations in China. Are you crazy, people? That is not how you build diplomacy between countries.
You can't. You have to consider the losing face part. It's very, very serious, you know, and you got to remember their thinking process. You have to understand how they do it. And again, it's the yang, it's the imbalance of the yang part of our culture hammering the yin. You can't do that. You have to be balanced in diplomacy in order to, gain the Guangxi. They have, and also they have to understand too what's going on. If they're openly opening their doors, they're allowing influences in, and they got
to
be careful.
Well, have to.
Too.
They have to, and I know they're trying to shut down Yahoo, and they're trying to regulate Google. And I've heard of people have gone over there and sent emails to friends using their Yahoo, and then the next thing they know, boom, it's shut down, and they can't send any more emails from China. Of course, there's control going on.
Yeah, they don't want to. And you can't find anything on Tiananmen Square, or Taiwan, or Tibet. I mean, it's just the whole thing. They don't want their people to get upset. You got to remember, they will do exactly what the government tells them to do because that's what they do. Okay, that's the training. If they're taught one way, it's going to be hard to change it. But you have to meet in the middle somehow. There has to be a middle ground. You can't demand things. You can't do this or whatever. But then China or these other areas, you have to understand cause and effect.
Well, you also have to understand that it's really hard to keep 2.6 billion people in line.
Exactly.
It takes a heck of a government to do that.
Yeah. And it's just a lot of people and, the opportunities. I mean, you've been over there. I haven't seen an oak tree over there. It's a country that's void of a lot of wood processing thing. Everything's concrete.
I mean,
they don't have the resources to do a lot of things, too. That's another thing. And it's an entire society that's just growing at such a rapid rate that they need assistance. They need, you have to, it's cause and effect. You do something and
well, let's keep that in perspective. A lot of people think that, China's at runaway growth. It really isn't. They really have a very strong policy that does now not allow families to grow in size. But the society, Kevin is exactly right. Everybody wants a car, and they want it right now. The Chinese economy is absolutely booming compared to the rest of the world. And those people are doing really well, and they want stuff. They've gone far too long without it. They're moving into mega cities. The way that they're building their cities now with support agriculture, designed mass transportation systems, putting their power plants way outside the city, nuclear power plants feeding power into the city so they don't have to burn coal anymore. There are a lot of things that they're doing right, but their society is growing really modern, really fast.
Exactly, yeah. They're very responsive. It's amazing that when I tell my university students, teaching them our language, how we do things, how do you speak to an American, how you speak to a New Yorker is different than how you speak to someone from California or the Midwest, business-wise. So that's what I teach them, how, about the language, about how we speak. So they can know how to talk, and we got to know how in a language whether it be body or weather, how to talk to others, how to talk to, you know, how to communicate that. And that's what we need to do, is communicate better on that level. That's where the yin yang, that's where the balance comes in.
Well, that's true. I mean, I understand the balance, but I also understand when time is running out. You can't run the same paradigm.
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely. There's the time factor is accelerating to a point where, okay, now what? How do we handle this?
Well, that's a good question. That's a question for another program.
Well, that's part of, you know, part of learning, like the gifts that we, you know, were given by our ancients, you know, whether it be the writings that we find in Egypt or wherever, or the old things, the artifacts that we find, and to use these and try to reconcile how these things can be used to help our society, because they were there for a reason. They were put there in the time capsules, libraries, if you call them. And it has a language, and we're experiencing that. There's something inside each one of us that's resonating inside the language, you know. And some of us may want to go to the Xian pyramids. That's great. Let's go. And if that'll help your consciousness along and your awakening, that's great. And that's what the whole topic is about. Is it's about the languages. It's about the how we communicate with one another. And what we can do in the future to solve the issues that we have, because there isn't a lot of time.
Well, that's true. You know, I think that some societies can look at it and say, well, you know, we have generations. We'll just wear the West down. Come on, they're just kids. They've only been around for 300 years. We've been around for 5,000 years. We can outlast them. We were here when they got here. And we will be here when they destroy themselves. But if you really believe that the ancient societies knew that the earth was going to align itself with very strange powers, frequencies, particles, gravities in these parts of space, and it's going to have cataclysmic effects on the planet and on the human race itself, then maybe we don't have generations of time. Maybe generations of time are just about run out. So the old paradigms are not going to work.
Exactly. I agree. And it's just, and when I think about this, 10 years ago or 5 years ago, I could not be doing a radio show like this. 6 years ago, I would never consider going to China. So there are ones who are doing things in order to try to bring to light some things, to help others along as guides, as teachers. And that's what we are. We're guides, we're teachers, we're also students too. And that's our responsibility. I mean, your show is, you know, you have a responsibility to your listeners and to listen what they want to talk about, what they want to feel, and what they, because it's about them. In my classes, when we speak about languages and that, it's about what do you want to learn? How do you want to feel? How do you want to communicate? What would be the best way of finding success in what we're doing in the classroom? Because it's about them. And our classroom is the planet Earth. And what's inside of it, duality, everything that's inside of it, inner Earth, which is, you know, everyone contributes to the planet. And that's part of the classroom. The classroom, well, my classes, I teach them outside. We will go outside. And that's how the ancients taught. They weren't in classrooms inside, unless the weather is bad. But for the most part, our classroom is what we learn from nature. It's from the animals. It's from our ancient teachers, our ancestors. And we need to learn to the language of how they spoke. And the emotional content of this language that is so ancient and so old, that we need to discover that. And they're saying, yeah, come on, it's over here. Go down this hole. Go down the rabbit hole over there. Or this is where it's at. So they're guiding us. That's why they're awakening us. That's why people are having these dreams and speaking these languages that they don't know. Because it's part of that awakening process in order to solve the issues that we have inside now, because it's accelerating and we need to grow.
Well, that's what we're all about here, growing, learning, trying to figure out, trying to understand, and when we do understand, gain wisdom. You know, wisdom is gained not through getting everything right. It's through getting things wrong now and then. It's through lessons learned. It's okay to get it wrong. Admit you're wrong, pick it up, move on. Get your head straight, pick yourself up, and gain wisdom. You know, when it's said that God is wise, figure out how he got the wisdom. The same way you're getting it. Line by line, precept upon precept. Kevin, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the program. I look forward to communicating with you offline, and
we will
perhaps schedule this expedition to these places the West has never seen, and then we'll fix it.
We'll fix it, and we'll also go see the inner Earth too. We'll find it. We'll get there.
Well, that's the struggle. The focus is on Arctic.
Believe in it.
And just feels like the right place to go.
Exactly, and I'm there. Such a pleasure. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I also want to thank the listeners for the questions and for listening. And perhaps we got off the subject for a little bit, but I'm really appreciative of this time. I really do. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. And have a wonderful week. We'll be in touch.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Good night. There you have it, Earth Explorers, March 21st, 2010. Keep in mind that the space station is overhead. If you haven't seen it, you should go to a website called heavensabove.com. That's heavens-above.com. Sign up. It's free. Put in your city, your state, your zip code, and it will tell you when the space station is going to fly over. If you haven't seen it, it's because you haven't looked up, because there's a whole city going by overhead, and it's so bright you can even see it in the daytime. That's right, you can see it in the daytime if it's not right next to the sun. Really, really spectacular. Don't forget, Remembering the Future goes on sale next week. If you take advantage of the special, you're going to have discounts on the printed version, on the recorded version, and you'll be my friend as well. And don't forget Twitter. It's so easy, so free, and you can keep up with everything. You don't have to wait for Sundays. We'll see you next week on X Squared Radio. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.